Okay, good morning everyone on this very bright morning, thank you. Welcome to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council Planning, Special Planning Committee. My name is Brendan McKeown and I will be chairing this meeting. A couple of points before we do start. If you have a mobile phone, could you switch it to silent or switch it off, please? And can I ask members of the public to refrain from commenting during the course of the discussions. It says here, if there is any disruption to the meeting, you may be asked to leave the meeting, but I'm sure that won't be the case. On my right, I have officers from the Planning Department, and on my left, I have officers from Law and Governance Departments. Officers from the Planning Department will present the application. Members of the public who have indicated to speak will be given 10 minutes, and I will indicate when they have used up 9 of those minutes. Ward members are also entitled to speak for up to 10 minutes. An audio recording is being made of this meeting, and that will be published on the Borough Council's website. Members of the committee are reminded that they do not enjoy immunity as that enjoyed by our colleagues in Parliament. Members may only deal with the planning application before them, in accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework and the local plan, together with any other relevant planning matters. So having read that, we move on to the agenda proper. The first item is apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Cross, who is substituted by Councillor Beattie, Councillor Anne Hobbs, who hasn't appointed a substitute, Councillor Roy James, who is substituted by Councillor Anne Edgela, and Councillor Dean McNaughton, who also has not submitted a substitute.
Okay, right. Thank you very much. Any declarations of interest from members or lobbying?
A couple of points this time, Chair. As well, I work for Severn Trent, but I have no bearing on the decision making planning. Secondly, I'm a ward member for the adjoining ward for this application, and some of the viewpoints mentioned in the report are within my ward. However, I am not predetermined and I did not attend any of the parish meetings when this application was discussed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Chairman, I'm the ward member for Ecclesfield. Okay. I took no part in any discussion regarding this application.
Okay, thank you very much. Noted.
And I'll be sitting on the committee then.
Yes, yeah, okay. Thank you. You want to go?
Yeah.
Okay. Ed Hundley.
So this application is for the construction of a ground-mounted solar farm and associated infrastructure to include ancillary structures, transformers, water attenuation features, access routes and perimeter fencing with CCTV. The site covers approximately 43 hectares and 2 parcels linked across Ringtone Lane and would provide a DCP for 44 megawatts with an export capacity of 30.25 megawatts. Solar panels would be arranged in rows with a maximum height of 2.7 metres above ground, separated by spacing of between 2.5 to 3.5 metres. Infilling of hedgerow gaps is proposed as part of the landscaping mitigation, as well as the planting of 367 metres of additional hedgerow and 53 English oak trees. Onto the presentation on the screens, the plan and aerial view show the location of the application site. It's southwest of Ecclesfield and to the west of the A519. Satellite view shows the A519 on the right hand side of the image and the application site HDMA. The photo plan is split into 2 parts, one for parcel A on the screen at the moment and the next for parcel B. It shows the location of the following 7 photographs that are taken from within and around the site. Parcel A on the screen now, and parcel B with the 2nd and 3rd photographs. A lot of these correspond with places that members stopped earlier on the site visit. Image 1 is a view looking southwest from the public footpath opposite the junction of the A519 and Wootton Lane. The application site lies beyond the crest of the hill and the vegetation in the background. 2 is taken from Cash Lane looking north. This is the southernmost point of the application site. Members may recall a car pulled into this field gate this morning as we went past. image three, again is where the bus stopped earlier. This is taken from the existing access into the site off Cash Lane into the southern parcel. Image four is a view from the public right of way leading to Horsley Hall. The field in the foreground is not part of the application site. The application site is in the distance here. Image five and six are from the northwest corner of the site. Image five is looking along the boundary to the northeast, along the public right of way. And image six, from a very similar location, looks along the boundary to the southeast. And finally, image seven is a view from the existing access into the site from Wingate Lane, looking north. This is the first field gate that we stopped at and went through this morning. Plan one is a general arrangement of the northern parcel. This is referred to as parcel A in the officer's report. Plan two is the general arrangement of the southern parcel, parcel B. Plan three is a typical elevation showing the proposed solar PV array. Four is a typical elevation of the proposed Stockbridge fence, gates and CCTV posts. Plan five, detail of the proposed internal access tracts. Six, the elevation drawing of the proposed transformer stations. Seven is the distribution network operator substation. Eight, the customer substation. Nine, the control building. And 10, the spare parts container. Final plan, plan 11, is a proposed landscape mitigation plan. The green elements show the solar panels and the purple indicates the general purpose meadow planting. Hedge and tree planting is also shown on this drawing. Two written representations have been received since the agenda was published, both raising objection. Neither of them raise any additional material considerations beyond those that have been discussed within the officer's report. The recommendation is that the application be approved as per the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you very much. Now I believe we have. Sorry, Scott.
Yes, in regard to that report, I noted we have plans of various structures proposed. I didn't see any plans for the various attenuation ponds and drainage systems. Do we have that to hand?
We don't, no.
Okay, so we have a speaker in objection and a speaker in support. We'll go with the objector first, Mr. Colin Graham. You can, whatever's comfortable for you. It's 10 minutes, so I'll give you the choice.
Okay.
Once you start, I'll let you know after 9 minutes where we are. Okay, thank you.
As residents who do not have the backing and resources of a multinational company with its many graphs, tables and maps, we can only use the observations of those who live in the vicinity of the two sites 365 days a year. We speak from personal experiences over many years as to why we are opposed to this application. The council has received 109 submissions from the public, one for and 108 against, equating to 99% against the scheme. Having personally consulted many of those residents, here is a summary of their reasons and objections. An industrial size intrusion into unspoilt countryside within Ecclesham Parish, an aspect of crops, trees, grass, hedgerows and wildlife, an area not recognised by the local plan for Stafford Borough and the local plan preferred options borough policy map 2020-2040 as areas of potential renewable energy. Neither show Wingate Lane or Cash Lane as preferred areas for development. You cannot say that 43 hectares, 105 acres, of solar panels, framing components, security fencing and CCTV cameras is not an intrusion viewed from surrounding hamlets. The Staffordshire Structure Plan, Regional Character Assessment Area 61, Landscape Types, the Staffordshire Plain and West Staffordshire Lowland Point 12 state, the agricultural land quality is generally good. Intensive animal cropping, which contributes significantly to the area's visual character. The large-scale open rolling nature of the countryside ensure that the whole landscape is on view. Thus, the solar farm constitutes an incongruous feature on an unspoilt tract of the West Staffordshire Plain. National Planning Policy Framework. A strengthening of the environmental objective should involve the words protect and enhance. Planning practice guidance regarding landscape character assessment states that the great care should be taken to ensure heritage assets are conserved in a manner appropriate to their significance, including impact proposals on views important to their setting. Currently, the sites are overlooked by Grade 1 listed High Offley Church, Grade 2 listed Cash Farm, Johnson Hall and Johnson Hall Lodge, and the elegant nearby Hawkey Hall. We concur with the Conservation Officer that the proposals are still contrary to NPPF policy paragraphs and Section 66(1) of the Planning Listed Building and Conservation Area Act of 1990. The site covers good agricultural land. 73% is BMV Grade 3A or above. And in 33 years I have overlooked the Cash Lane site. It has grown wheat, barley, oats, maize, potatoes, and scenery. Placing an industrial sized development on agricultural land at a time of food shortage, over reliance on food imports and the war in Ukraine is strategically short sighted. We're also told that the national grid itself has insufficient capacity to take any more solar. It is undesirable to take one energy resource out of effective use in order to develop another. The spread shading and root development of ancient trees within the site is also threatened, contrary to local plant policies. Planting hedgerows, as proposed, is in itself a change to the current character. None of the proposals are meeting paragraphs stated in the MPP regarding creating more harm than benefit. With regard to traffic implications and flooding, no number of graphs table statistics will convince local residents of any benefit in this regard. The two lanes are not large enough now, with insufficient width, minimal ditching and insubstantial soft verges. A Staffs County Council lorry recently dropped into the ditch on Cash Lane on the 20th of April this year at 12:10 p.m. Blocked the road for several hours. No mention of width, proximity to buildings, drain damage and risk of collision is made. Names and addresses of residents already affected by this can be supplied. The construction of a new access road between the two sites will cause significant harm to the area concerned and show that the infrastructure is insufficient and actually crosses land which the applicant no longer owns. Passing places and drainage is totally inadequate as things stand now. The addition of thousands of panels removes the permeable ground beneath them from the calculation of any rainwater damage. Drainage, sorry. Making matters worse, especially on Cash Lane, 100 metres past Cash Farm, and the broken culvert on Wingate Lane near August Cottage. Flooding is a common occurrence in Cash Lane. For example, on the 19th December last year, by the small holding opposite the proposed field. Once again, the name of those affected can be supplied. The Wingate Lane A51 and Cash Lane A51 junctions are still very dangerous, even at reduced speed. For example, there was a road traffic accident on the 12th of November at the Wingate Lane junction. That's the overturned vehicle in the adjacent cottage garden. Visibility displays are still very poor. 1 week of traffic counts and 4 month traffic volume figures do not represent the full year's traffic movements as experienced by residents. No resolution is provided to traffic congestion. Even with an escort vehicle, this will not remove the meeting of solar farm vehicles, local cars, tradesmen's vans, milk cheese tankers, farm tractor trailers and effluent disposal vehicles
on the two single track lanes, let alone large construction vehicles. Residents experience this regularly, even without additional traffic movements. No mention is made about the other roads used by the construction vehicles, i.e. diverted along Green Lane instead of through Eccleshall Centre to gain access to the sites. Again involving turning onto the 851 Cross Butts Crossroads. The road infrastructure is just inadequate. Residents of Badger Cottage Cash Lane and Langdale Cottage Winter Lane can testify. Mental health and well-being. A calm rural life in the countryside will now be akin to living on an industrial site, and a countryside walk akin to an urban walk. Again, it is harm and no benefit. Both public rights of way are affected. Public right of way 118 is almost impassable. All four stiles are broken, and the finger post off Cash Lane was removed by persons unknown, witnessed by a resident, and a fence under section 131 of the Highways Act 1990 in 2023. The proposed sites are directly overlooked by several properties and completely surrounded by unspoilt countryside. Compare this with the solar farm adjacent to the A41 at Fries Heath near an old aerodrome. This is completely flat, with only one residential property and two farms, not directly overlooked, but adjacent to a commercial estate and the A41. It bears no comparison to the wrong sloping location of Winkett Cash Lane. A previous solar farm of 5 megawatts covering 12.58 hectares in High Offaly was refused in 2015. The Winkett Cash Lane proposal at 30 megawatts on 43 hectares is nearly four times the size of the High Offaly site. The application contains many issues that simply cause harm to the area: the growing stock, history, residents, visitors, rural aspect, wildlife, walkers and people passing through. This is far greater than any financial benefit, which is only to the French solar company and the landowner. Panels should go on planned industrial commercial estates, car parks and brownfield sites, such as Red Hill A34, I-54 and WM1 at Junction 12 and M6. Unplanned ad hoc blocks on agricultural unspoilt countryside.
Well done. Thank you very much. Thank you. You can go back to your seat. Thank you. We now have a speaker in support of Louise Chadwick. Thank you. Comfortable. You also have 10 minutes. And when you're ready, start.
Thank you for the opportunity to present today. I am the planning agent representing the applicant, speaking in support of this application.
Can I just ask you to speak up a little bit? Thank you. Project.
At a national level, the government's Clean Power 2030 Action Plan sets targets for clean energy sources to produce at least 95% of Great Britain's generation by 2030, including 45 to 47 gigawatts of solar power. Data published by the government shows that as of the end of April 2026, there was 22.3 gigawatts of solar capacity in the UK. This represents an additional 100 megawatts to be energised every week until 2030. At a local level, Stafford Borough Council demonstrated its commitment to tackling climate change by declaring a climate emergency in July 2019 and committing to achieve carbon neutrality across its own operations by 2040. Ahead of the UK government's national net zero target of 2050. The declaration recognised the need for urgent action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and subsequently influenced the Council's approach to climate change mitigation, sustainable development and the promotion of renewable energy generation. The Council has since strengthened its ambitions further by adopting an aspirational target of achieving net zero operations by 2035. In this context, renewable energy developments such as solar farms have an important role to play in supporting both local and national decarbonisation objectives. As identified within the government's Clean Power 2030 Action Plan connections reform annex update, the requirement for approximately 4 gigawatts of additional solar capacity across the Midlands by 2030 highlights the significant scale of renewable energy deployment still required in the region. The substantial capacity requirement demonstrates the strategic importance of bringing forward appropriately located solar energy developments and provides a strong justification for continued investment in renewable energy infrastructure to support the delivery of national decarbonisation and energy security objectives. Alongside the need for clean energy, recent global instability emphasises the need to reduce reliance on fossil fuels, especially those imported from outside of the UK. The recent King's Speech delivered in May 2026 announced plans to introduce an energy independence bill to scale up homegrown renewable energy. Solar is one of the key renewable energy sources that can assist in creating a clean, balanced energy mix whilst increasing energy security. The proposed development will generate enough electricity to power around 9,600 homes every year and offset approximately 12,900 tonnes of CO2 per year over its 40-year lifespan. The National Plan and Policy Framework states at paragraph 161 that the planning system should support the transition to net zero by 2050. It further advises at paragraph 168 that when determining planning applications for all forms of renewable energy and their associated infrastructure, significant weight should be given to the benefits associated with renewable energy. The officer report demonstrates that the principle of development is considered to be acceptable and that the proposed development accords with the overarching policies and principles of the MPPA and the local plan, including policies SP1, SP6, EN2 and N3, subject to the impact of the proposed development upon the character of the site and the surrounding area and other environmental factors being acceptable. A number of technical reports have been prepared to accompany the application. These reports identify that the development would not give rise to any significant adverse impacts. The landscape and visual assessment concluded that the effects of the development would be restricted to a localised geographical area and would not result in substantial harm to landscape character beyond the site boundary, nor would there be substantial detrimental effects to visual amenity across a wider area other than in very close proximity. Landscape mitigation is proposed, which includes managing existing hedgerows to a height of 3 metres and additional hedgerow and tree planting. The layout of the proposed development has considered the public right-of-way footpaths within the site, with a 10-metre grassland corridor to the fence line, which increases to a minimum of 15.5 metres to the nearest panel. The proposals aim to create a balance between screening the development and retaining a sense of openness along the footpaths. The Cash Lane site is within the setting of the listed Cash farmhouse due to its proximity. However, there are large modern barns to the north of the farmhouse. During the determination of the application, Johnson's Hall was designated as a listed building. Amendments were made to the proposal to include additional tree planting along the site's boundary. With the inclusion of mitigation, the significance of effect on the heritage assets is identified as low adverse in the supporting heritage assessment, which has lessened substantial harm in MPPF terms. It is considered that the public benefits of the scheme would outweigh the lessened substantial harm identified, which is also highlighted in the officer's report. As well as additional tree and hedgerow planting, the proposals include scrub, grass and meadow mix seed and biodiversity benefits. Whilst the application was submitted prior to the legal requirement of the BMG, the applicant is committed to providing enhancements which equate to a gain of 39.58% for area habitats and 29.67% for hedgerows. The construction period would last approximately 4 to 5 months. A one-way system for construction vehicles is proposed to reduce the chances of HGVs meeting on Cash Lane and Woodcote Lane. The transport assessment notes that any vehicle trips to and from the site would be negligible in both the construction and operation period, and the highway impact on the local network would be imperceptible. Staffordshire County Council and the Capacities Highways Authority do not have any objections to the development. The site is in flood zone 1 at the lowest risk of flooding. A drainage strategy has been produced which includes attenuation basins and interception channels across the site. On-site investigation works and hydraulic modelling submitted in support of this application demonstrate that the proposed drainage strategy is feasible, with capacity within and connectivity to the existing drainage network, and that flood risk would not be increased elsewhere. The drainage strategy has been designed to ensure that runoff rates in the middle of pre-development greenfield equivalent. It is acknowledged that the site contains best and most versatile agricultural land. However, this equates to just 20% of the landowner's total land holding, and this site has been put forward as the lowest yielding land, with crop yields 20 to 30% lower than other land within their holding. The installation and operation of the solar farm allows for agricultural diversification, and land quality would not deteriorate as a result of the development. During operation, the land could be retained for the use of sheep grazing and planting to provide diversity improvements. At the end of its operational lifespan, all infrastructure would be removed from the site. The land use framework, published by DEFRA in March 2026, states that the framework demonstrates clearly that we have enough land to maintain domestic food production, restore nature at scale, and build clean, homegrown power to provide energy security. The solar farm will connect to Ecclesfold primary substation, which is approximately 1 kilometre to the northeast of the northern site. The applicant has achieved Gate 2 status, placing it in the priority connection queue within the Clean Power 2030 Action Plan. While the final connection date is yet to be confirmed, we expect this information to be provided by the network operator between September and November. To conclude, solar farms are essential to accelerate the transition away from fossil fuels and rapidly decarbonise our electricity grid. To meet global climate targets and avoid the worst impacts of extreme weather, we must deploy large-scale renewable energy infrastructure immediately. Solar farms generate vast amounts of clean energy at a lower cost than new coal or gas plants, making them the most economically viable tool for reducing carbon emissions. Furthermore, they strengthen energy security by diversifying the power supply, reducing our vulnerability to volatile geopolitical fuel markets, and supplying predictable low-cost power. In the absence of any significant adverse impacts that outweigh the benefits of the scheme, and that the development is in general accordance with the development plan, we request that the committee support this application in line with the planning officer recommendations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. The board member is not here, but the board member, Councillor Jeremy Perth, has sent in something that he would like to be read out. And Ed, if you're going to do that,
yep.
Thank you. If you'd like to go back, please. Thank you.
I'd like to start by thanking the Chair of Democratic Services for allowing the ward member submission to the committee to be read out. Unfortunately, I'm away working today and I'm unable to contribute to the committee's deliberations. I speak today in opposition to this application, not to the principle of solar or some of the amendments that the applicant has made to the scheme as part of the planning process, but to the planning weight being given to some of the harms that the choice of this specific location will make, and I respectfully ask that the planning permission be refused. I think the policy narrative on solar and renewables is clearly set out direction of travel, not that I agree with it, because solar should be on industrial buildings, car parks and every new home built in the UK today, and not on the precious resource that we can make no more of, or is not sufficient in its entirety to satisfy the existing needs of our growing population today. And until solar is on these industrial buildings, we should not be choosing to carve up Britain's green and pleasant land. Solar works well in the summer, but poorly in winter and overnight, so it does not directly address our peak usage periods, and wind is a lot less land hungry. These points are lost for this debate, but should not be lost in the wider policy making at macro level, otherwise we will just get more of the same. Instead, the question I would like to pose today is whether the public benefits of this particular development outweigh the significant harm that would be caused at this particular location. The planning officer's report, in my view, is well balanced, and I thank the statutory consultees and residents for all their contributions. But the overall recommendation probably overbalances the government's policy over the local impact. The first and most important issue is the loss of a substantial area of best and most versatile agricultural land from productive use for up to 40 years. Approximately 73% of the site comprises Grade 2 and Grade 3A land. This is not ordinary farmland, it's some of the highest quality agricultural land available. National policy consistently states that poorer quality land should be preferred for solar development wherever possible. This is creating significant harm to the countryside of rural activities. The report argues that it is only a small part of the total agricultural land in the borough, but fails to demonstrate a policy that would mean solar panels over 43 hectares would be acceptable in this specific location. The government requires solar to be targeted at the worst grades of agricultural land, and not just the land that applicants put forward. The applicant argues that agriculture can continue beneath the panels. Technically that may be true, however grazing sheep beneath solar panels is not equivalent to retaining significant swathes of productive Grade 2 and Grade 3A farmland in active food production. There is a clear distinction between agricultural use and agricultural productivity. The failure of this application is to avoid best and most versatile agriculture. You can't chew on a solar panel after all. The second element I would like to highlight is the heritage impact. The Council's Conservation Officer has maintained an objection to this proposal. Despite several revisions to the scheme, concerns remain regarding harm to the setting of, amongst others, Johnson Hall and the wider historic landscape. National planning policy requires great weight to be given to the conservation of heritage assets. Even where harm is categorised as less than substantial, that harm must still carry considerable weight in the planning balance. Instead, if it is taken outside of the planning balance and looked at on its own in isolation and downplayed. If the Council's specialist conservation advisor remains unconvinced after years of amendments and negotiations, members should ask themselves whether the harm has genuinely been resolved. Third, there is the impact on landscape character and rural amenity. This proposal would introduce industrial infrastructure across a large area of open countryside. Solar panels, fencing, CCTV equipment, inverter stations, access tracks and associated infrastructure would fundamentally alter the character of this rural landscape for a generation. The fact that development may eventually be removed in 40 years' time offers little comfort to those who will experience that impact throughout that period and most of their lifetimes. I know the report looks at the issue as being temporary, but in human terms it is anything but temporary. Finally, there is the issue about the impact on public rights of way. Walkers currently experience open countryside and long rural views. Under this proposal, they would instead be walking through a landscape defined by security fencing, solar arrays and associated infrastructure. Mitigation planting may soften some views, but it cannot preserve the existing character of the countryside that people currently enjoy. To be clear, there is substantial local opposition. Eccleshaw Parish Council continues to object. More than 100 objections have been submitted. Those objections are not based upon opposition to renewable energy in principle. They are based upon legitimate planning concerns relating to heritage, landscape, public rights of way, and the loss of high quality farmland. Members are not required to approve every renewable energy scheme simply because it generates renewable energy. There is a great play made of public benefit through creating renewable energy, but this is not at no cost to buy or use or no cost to the location that it is sited within. These are commercial businesses looking to make a profit from giving the landowner a guaranteed rent at an inflated price for 40 years, and it is the public who are paying because they have no choice. So I have a different definition of public benefit. So I say again, members are not required to approve every renewable energy scheme simply because it generates renewable energy. National policy requires a balanced judgment. In this case, the proposal would cause harm to heritage assets, harm to landscape character, harm to the enjoyment of public rights of way, and the long-term loss of productive, best and most versatile agricultural land. Taken together, those harms are significant. Renewable energy can and should be delivered, but it should be delivered in the right place. This site is just not the right place. For those reasons, I respectfully ask members to refuse planning permission. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my and local residents' concerns.
Thank you, Ed. That was on behalf of Councillor Jeremy Perth. Okay, we've heard from all sides now. Who wants to start? Councillor Scott Spencer?
I've been making a number of notes and so forth about the presentations and from what I've read. So I could be here for quite some time, but maybe we should go into different stages potentially. I note the representative Jeremy Perth there, Councillor Jeremy Perth, about planning weight to renewables. I sort of agree with what he's saying there. I just quickly linked for what's available and what's planned sustainable and green sort of generation that's proposed, going to be built up or in the pipeline up to 2030, and that's approximately 60,000 megawatt. This scheme's providing 30 megawatt, which in the grand scheme of things is 0.05% of what the country is looking to get. These 60,000 are generally from offshore wind farms. And to put this into context again, this, the weight being put towards renewables, one wind farm produces approximately 10 to 15 megawatt. So what we're saying is here that two wind turbines could offset all of this land, potentially. So I feel that the weight being given to the renewables is maybe over-egged, for want of a better term, when there were significantly more viable solutions to provide significantly more megawattage, gigawattage, however you'd like, in the country coming online in the future. So that's that point. I have others, should I wait for the people to come in? Or?
Well, obviously we have to deal with the application that's before us, which is solar.
So I think, in that regard, I think the weight that's been given to the renewables is maybe too high. I think it shouldn't offset some of the other concerns, which is the heritage assets. I think the greater listed, what the conservation officer said at his points, he still has an objection. And as stated, the mitigation method still hadn't satisfied him. And I think also some of the mitigation methods regarding new oak trees and hedgerows and so forth, I question how that will work in winter when most of these plantations are deciduous and there will be no leaves on these and therefore no real screening. I know there's been great sort of mention of there's going to be new tree planting and so forth. I noted on the plan that most of these tree planting are oaks. Oaks grow at approximately 15 centimetres a year, and I'm just wondering how much screening that's actually going to provide over a 40-year time span. Just a quick calculation, an oak tree could maybe grow 6 metres in 40 years. Is that going to screen these properties or the actual solar farm? I'm not entirely sure. I also have done the Clinton Glare assessment. Sorry, I'm going on there because there's just a few things. I see the Clinton Glare assessment, it was conducted at 1.8 metres above ground level. When we did the site visit, I saw that the house on Cash Lane overlooks this solar farm directly, which it is two-storey. I can't see in the Clinton Glare assessment that any consideration has been given to the second floor windows on this property. If the Clinton Glare assessment has been up to 1.8 metres, how has this been addressed? Equally, on the Clinton Glare assessment, I can't see a designation between winter and summer when all the hedgerows, at the minute all the hedgerows are in green. In winter, obviously, they won't be. I can't see within the Clinton Glare report a difference between summer and winter. It's just a cumulative annual effect. So I call into question the Clinton Glare assessment as well. There are other aspects, but I think I'll maybe let other members come in. But yeah.
Thank you, Scott. We've got Councillor Jill Hood.
Thank you, Chairman. Very impressive, 108 objections and one supporting from local residents, and yet nowhere is there any evidence that the local area is going to benefit. There's no financial rewards, and yet the impact on the 100 and odd acres is going to be dire. There's great loss of prime agricultural land, with severe detrimental impact on the food chain and adverse impact on the landscape. It's also going to spoil the character in local countryside, the tranquility of the countryside. The young lady who spoke said that there would be little impact, she used the word negligible impact, on the surrounding area when transportation was being used at these very narrow lanes. They're not going to transport all these huge industrial solar panels overnight. It's going to take a considerable amount of time to get all of the infrastructure in there. I was extremely surprised, and I'm sorry I'm still in pounds, shillings and pence. I was extremely surprised to realise that these solar panels will reach a height of 9 feet in height. my naivety, I've seen many solar panel in fields, but didn't realise how high they were. And it was quite shocking in the coach to be travelling along the road and actually you're looking up at the fields. Some of them had quite a gradient on them. So it's just going to be vast, and no hedgerow or trees are going to hide the glare in the summer of those solar panels. There's just so many things that I made notes of during the travelling around, and the security fencing. I haven't seen a picture of the security fencing. It would be very helpful to know what this is going to look like and how high it is. I'd also like to know the acoustics of the battery that is running these solar panels. Do we have a measure of sound that's coming from the batteries? Because I know that there is a continual hum. I've actually experienced myself, but have we done a noise level? We have. Thank you. And I think that's me finished, but I'm sure I'll have something else to say. I don't support this application for those very things that I use, and also the conservation officer. I believe that the impact, both visually and sound-wise, unless the officer can tell me differently, on the heritage buildings, the conservation area, is not going to be a good impact. It's going to have a massive detrimental impact. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Councillor Ann Edgler.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you for your presentation and the site visit this morning. Yes, I mean, the gentleman, the objector, was mentioning about the National Grid couldn't take any more. Is that true? Is that true that the National Grid can't take any impact from these solar panels? The other question I've got, would all the good vehicles have to travel through the centre of Eccleshall to get to the site? Which avenue would they be taking to get there? And has any thought been given to putting these solar panels on the buildings instead of having to put them in the fields because of the impact also on wildlife as well? You know, we've not mentioned a lot about that, so I'm really concerned about that. So I'll be quiet now, I'll let other people speak, but I'd like to know about this National Grid. Has anybody got any answers? Thank you.
Okay. Anyone before I call Councillor Scott Spencer in again? Okay, Scott?
Yeah, I have another query regarding the, there's been a lot that's made about the impact of drainage and flood and so forth. The application. I've seen from the plans various attenuation ponds have been placed around about. I couldn't see any depths of these and the volumes of material that are going to be generated from this. I also haven't, and it's mentioned the soil management plan, soil will be spread out at 300 mil, but then there will be 2 metre bunds placed where this is unable to be done. So if it's 300 mil across the site in various places, potentially that's increasing the height of the site, and are the solar panels going to be placed at this additional height? If not, where are these bunds and the soil going to be placed? Because I couldn't see anything on the plans that states or shows where these bunds are going to be. If they're going to be visually opposed, or if they're going to form part of the visual wall, dumbing down, if you will, the site. Also, Cash Lane field. I know the attenuation pond is placed at pretty much the highest point of the field, so I call into question the actual assessment that's been made and how exactly that attenuation pond is going to mitigate the drainage from the majority of the field which sits below this point. So I'd like some, I really think that needs to be looked at again. I think the soil management, although there's a, as I said, it's going to be a soil management report, if they're not going to take it off site, you've got to keep it on site. Where they're keeping it, because with the solar panels, the places they are, and with the mitigation, the distance from the hedgerows, where is the soil going to be stored, please?
Okay. Councillor Peter Jones.
Is there a possible answer?
What I'm going to do is just assemble a few questions and ask Louise if you feel comfortable to answer some of those questions that are being raised. Mm-hmm. So we'll just get three or four questions and I'll invite you back. Okay, thank you. Peter.
There's an expression that's useful for the elephant in the room. I don't think it's rather this type of solar power is the elephant in the room. I've been to lots of planning meetings in my time on the council, and suddenly the thing we're all talking about and trying to avoid talking about is solar power. I'm looking at the parish council had 90 some odd objections, and people have written in with objections to this application, and not just this one but other applications. The parish council, who represent the people of Eccleshall, are against this application, you can see why from the people who've written in, and our Colin there, who's got his application, who's objecting to it because where he lives and the people around him have objected to it. And going through the report, there are things that you can see why they're objecting to, but they don't like it. And at the lady of the previous application, if you remember, Mr. Chairman, used the expression, this land of ours that we live in, this green and pleasant land. And we drove in the coach today and there was nothing but green and pleasant land. There was nothing there except a few historic buildings and green and pleasant land. And we're going to stick these huge things. There was a mention of glint in here, Mr. Chairman. And you suddenly realise these great huge mirrors virtually, they're going to reflect the sun. Miles of the flipping things. And there's no doubt about it that the solar power is going to be extremely useful to us now and in the future. I've made notes, and there's all sorts of things that need mentioning. And the traffic highway through that small, on that coach today, they're so narrow those roads, they're not going to widen them, they're going to be awful. And for 4 or 5 months, people who live in that area and the surrounding area are going to be driven crazy by the noise and by the traffic and by that's going to drive them all crazy. And I agree with the whole. I mean, I object to this application for any number of reasons. And like Councillor Spencer, I could talk for an hour on the things I object to about this application. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Beattie.
Thank you, Chairman. The thing that particularly bothers me is the, it actually goes back to the agent who's mentioned that the sites must be appropriately located. And in terms of all the comments that have been made, we're getting the feeling that this is certainly not an appropriate located site. But particularly for me, is the loss of the BNP, the best, most versatile value of the land. So this is a very productive farm in an area of the borough and the county where the grade 2 and grade 3A land is actually at a premium because the majority of land in this county is 3B or below, and it seems very unwise to take up our best and most versatile land when it's not actually the most appropriate location, despite what she says. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Scott.
A couple of things for bringing in questions to the agent that's here. I'd also, just before I do that, I'd like to just follow up on what Councillor Beattie said there. Because we keep talking about food production for this land, but I think what we're also forgetting is there's haylage, silage, and so forth, which if you put sheep on, that's great, but you can no longer, this is no longer productive in any other form. And I think we forget the value of haylage and silage and so forth to this area, you know, cattle and so forth, especially if we go into winter and it's the possibility of, you know, of losing its availability within the different extreme weather events we have. So I think we need to add that in there, just not just the food production, but a loss of actual other agricultural means. But there's a question to the agents. It's again on glint and glare. Certainly on Cash Lane, where there's the field entrance, there's going to be, obviously there are going to be no hedgerows there whatsoever, so that's going to be open to the road. So there's a glint and glare issue there.
And it's mentioned on Wincup Lane, is it? Is it the one? The Clinton Glare just there. And I know from the statutory requirements, if it's over 60 minutes per day, you have to put mitigation in place. And again, I come down to the winter and the fact that most of those hedgerows are deciduous, most of the planting that's been proposed is also deciduous. So I'm trying, and the assessment is done annually, I'm trying to see how much, if in winter, where 60 minutes statutory level is exceeded, and again, that's not shown in the Clinton Glare report. And it can't be mitigated on Cash Lane because it's an open entrance to gain access. And I can't see during the winter how that glinting glare can be reduced below 60 minutes with an open hedgerow arrangement, which it is at the deciduous. So again, I call it a question, unless the agent can clarify where the glinting glare assessment.
Okay, I'm going to invite someone to try and address some of those questions. Who wants to do it? Yourself? Yeah. Louise?
Can it be me or the applicant?
Oh, the applicant, whoever. We've got some questions here about the bunds, location of the attenuation ponds, impact on Cash Farm, the first floor windows, definition of the land quality, etc., and productivity. Okay, so what happens to all the soil, the bunds?
Relatively speaking, there's very little soil that's displaced because we are creating a number of access tracks.
Excuse me, you have to speak up. Okay. Please. And what's your name, sorry?
My name is Paul Dempster.
Paul Dempster. Okay.
Excuse me, Chairman, could I ask where Paul is from?
I'm going to say, please.
I'm from Care Renewables.
I'm
from Care Renewables.
Yeah, so okay, but you're not registered to speak, I will have to go back to right. Louise. Thank you.
Right.
So, yeah, Paul just mentioned that there'll be little soil that's removed from the site. We have access tracks that need constructing. We do also have a condition for a soil management plan that we can sort of deal with the soil level as part of the condition.
Would you like to see the soil management plan?
It's not satisfactory, it didn't answer the question. In the letter that's put on here, which relates to the soil management plan, I agree, it's going to go more detailed later to characterise what sort of types you've got and how it will be managed and so forth. However, it states in there, of which we have to look at what we've been given in the pack, that soil will be spread at 300mm depth across areas where it cannot be lost elsewhere. Or if it can't be done that, bunds will be created up to 2 metres high and it goes into, we put in layers and so forth and so on. Nowhere on the plan does it say where these bunds are going to be. Nowhere does it state where this 300mm soil is going to be spread. So, where are you losing the soil? You've got access tracks. They will need to be dug. All the topsoil needs to be dug out of that. That'll be lost. The attenuation ponds, that all they'll have to be excavated. There'll be topsoil. There'll also be subsoil and clay, sand and gravels beneath that, they'll also need to be stored, funded or lost on site. All of the various drainage pathways you have to put in there, swales and so forth, will also have to be stripped. All the various foundations you're going to be putting in, topsoil will have to be dug out and lost and put somewhere. There's a significant volume of topsoil here and other materials, and there is no indication as to how they're going to be lost and how that's going to affect the wind subfloor insulation. So, can that please be clarified? The soil management plan is not going to address that.
The foundations for the sort of ancillary infrastructure, they are a really small amount on the site, but we do believe that it could be dealt with by the condition. All the soil will be kept on site.
The position of the attenuation pond on the highest point, how was that decided?
I don't have the topography plan to hand, but we have done extensive work with our Fulbright consultants to develop this drainage scheme. We've had various meetings with the Leaf Local Flood Authority to develop it. We've done on-site modelling, hydraulic modelling, and they don't have any objections to the scheme. They are happy with our drainage strategy.
Just going to introduce Ed.
Ed.
We'll come back in.
There have been numerous rounds of conversations, meetings between the applicants and the lead local flood authority. So they consulted on various amendments to this, additional information provided to ensure that there is no additional runoff from the site. The lead local flood authority are satisfied. They have required the applicant to provide a lot of information on this one. And they recommend three conditions, one of those being page 75, condition 22. So that effectively sets out that they are satisfied with the principles that have been submitted. This is how we're going to achieve appropriate drainage on this site, but by condition, and this is very standard condition, they require full design calculations, full details, so details of new connections, detailed design of all drainage elements, including long sections, cross contour, details of the cross contour intersection drains, detailed levels and exceedance plan. So the LLFA are happy that it can be achieved, but they request the detail at the next stage.
Sorry, Chair, we'd have to approve those details if we're planning to get all the information.
So by condition, so the applicant would be required to submit a detailed scheme to us. We would consult the LFA, and if they are happy with those details, we discharge the condition.
Did you have questions, Al?
My question's not been answered, Chairman. I've
written a few down here, but I've forgotten your question.
Sorry?
I've forgotten your point.
Oh, thank you. Please. And about the traffic going through Eccleshall and that, you know, can I have that answered? And about the solar panels being put on agricultural buildings or other buildings?
Well, I don't think that's relevant here.
Just one question.
So, traffic through Eccleshall, is that the way we... I'm sorry, Carl.
So, our transport assessment considers routing from the M6 to the site. Our transport consultants believe that via Green Lane is the most appropriate route rather than going south. It's the most direct route. We do have construction traffic management plan conditions, so we can determine final routing.
You want to cover? Okay, Ed.
So I can clarify again, the local highway authority are satisfied with the proposed approach. So it suggests that they're south from Eccleshall, and to avoid any conflict or minimise conflict with vehicles on Winkler Lane and Cash Lane, a one-way system is proposed. So construction vehicles would enter the site via Winkler Lane, use the temporary access between the two parcels of land, and then exit the site via Cash Lane. So there wouldn't be any conflict between construction vehicles. It's also proposed as part of that approach that there would be a vehicle guiding the construction vehicles or people there to ensure that they are escorted along those routes. In terms of the condition of the lanes, there's a condition survey to be secured by condition. That's condition 11 on page 72. That suggests that a survey would be taken of the surrounding road network prior to commencement of development. Then any damage to those roads caused by construction vehicles would be repaired. And then on to condition 12, the construction transport management plan to be secured by condition as well. That would set out the precise details. So that is something that the developer would be obliged to stick to. As with the drainage, the details of that would come through to the local planning authority. The highway authority would be consulted on those precise details of it.
Thank you. Councillor Scott Spencer.
I come back to the glare and glints. Certainly on Cash Lane, the property that overlooks that, the feel at that point is that rises away from that property. I'm not about the property that's directly on the road, that farm itself, or the cottage just south of it, with the two-storey with a lot of windows on the second storey. In looking at the glare and glint report, it's noted that it will be affected, and it will only be a nuisance issue. Now, I'm pretty sure that we've, on other other times other applications where local amenity or disturbance and so forth of residents is taken as quite high regard. Someone else's nuisance is someone else's pain and anguish over potentially 40 years of life. And it mentions maybe some mitigation. I can't see any increased mitigation in the area around Ashton, around that property to address that. Yes, it says hedges are going to be grown 3 metres, but 3 metres still does not reach the height of a second floor residential window. So has that been addressed? And can the agent or anybody else answer that question?
I'll ask the question then. Have you considered Glint and Vare on first floor levels at Cash Farm?
So the Glint assessment does mention about any sort of Glint being visible from upper floor properties, and this is only for a very limited proportion of the day. Again, the environmental health officer has no objections to the proposal and has raised no concerns.
You raised something, Scott, about 60 minutes a day.
Yes. Yeah, it says in statutory guidance that if Glint and Glare is over 60 minutes duration in a 20-minute daily period, then further mitigation is required. Obviously, in summer with a 3 metre hedgerow, that can easily be attained. But in winter, when there are generally no leaves on these hedgerows and can be seen straight through, has a definition between summer, I couldn't see it in the very board, between the difference between summer and winter. All that's been given is annual figures across a broad spectrum. Has that been addressed? The winter glare?
I believe the Glint report does mention about winter views, about, I don't know the technicalities, but it is in the report.
It mentions that it's got a sort of Jeffrey.
Ed wants to just jump in.
So the Glint and Glare, the assessment does refer to upper storey rooms and windows, and does acknowledge that there'd be an impact there. The assessment is based on computer modelling, so it's going to be done. But again, I don't know the precise details.
Yeah, it's based at a 1.8 metre level. It's mentioned in the report, so any glaring glint is only at a 1.8 metre level. So therefore, any agricultural vehicles were significantly higher than that. Lorries, SUVs, or any first floor windows have not been assessed.
So the assessment does acknowledge that there would be an impact to upper floor rooms. It's a computer model, so it's not somebody going out doing all of these assessments. It's going to take into account the fact that there's sort of throughout the course of the year.
Yes.
The conclusion is that there are two windows in the day where there's likely to be, or there may be glint, periods in the day, probably about two. These are between 5:20 and 7:00, and then roughly 5:30 and 7:20. However, that's the earliest and latest times in the day that there could be an impact. It's not saying that there would be an impact at that period. Beyond that, these assessments have been considered by the council specialists as well. So they've considered the potential harm, any necessary mitigation, and we'll consider it against the relevant guidelines. They're our specialists, they're advising us. They're raising no objection and not requesting any further detail. My final point on that is the planning decision's got to come down to a balance. So there are very few circumstances where we can say that the development causes no harm to anything. That harm's got any harm, cumulative harm, different types of harm, needs to be balanced against the benefits of the scheme as well. So it's not saying that there's no harm, acknowledging what the level of that harm would be, and both the consultants acting on behalf of the applicant and the council specialists are saying that harm is an objection.
Just a point of clarity, I noticed at least 4, maybe 5 first floor windows, not 2.
No, sorry, no, 2 periods of time, 2 windows of time, not...
Oh, 2 windows of time, apologies.
So,
yeah. Sorry,
2 periods of time during the day, that's why I changed the periods. So they're beyond 60 minutes, but it's a theoretical maximum.
I'm sorry, I know I'm taking quite a lot of time here, but I'd just like some clarity. It mentioned mitigation measures are to be, what mitigation
up from the 3 metre high hedgerows, which will not cover, is going to be put in place at the crash site.
It should be noted though that I appreciate hedges change character over here.
Yes.
Hedges are 3 metres in height, where the highest point of the solar panels is 2.7. So we'll aim for those.
What the lands?
Yeah, we'll aim for those.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Any more questions to raise? There seems to be some debate about the quality of the land, how much of it is better quality.
70% was grade 3A and 2, according to
that's
the report.
Yeah,
we've done
what you said. Yeah, we have done an agricultural land classification assessment as part of the application. Those are the figures. But as I mentioned in my speech, it's 20% of the landowner's total holding. It's the lowest yielding land that they have, 20 to 30% lower. And the DEFRA's land use framework have published a report that states that we have enough land for food production, nature restoration, and renewable energy sources. They stated in that report they are going to be competing demands.
Peter Jones?
Just a general question, really. I keep saying this out of this cell phone. In 40 years' time, it will be reverted back. I wonder who's going to enforce it. We're not going to be here in 2 years' time or 1 year's time.
I intend to be around.
Are we saying we don't care?
For yourself.
No, I just wondered. That was
There are conditions in the report which.
Oh, thank you, Richard.
Secure the decommissioning plan.
Yes.
So that will be secured at that time.
A set in concrete, is it? So 40 years' time, somebody will
dig this
out from our records and say, these people are going to.
Yes.
This lady will be.
We still refer
61,
back to
Councillor Scott Spencer.
I noticed in the report there's mention about ongoing maintenance and so forth. There'll be a few trips here and there. So, 4 years' time, I know at the moment solar panel technology is increasing almost exponentially with regards to the area that they take up and the capacity which they can achieve. So, obviously, let's say this takes place in a year's time, 2 years' time, they put in the solar panels which will generate, let's say, 600 watt per metre squared, whatever it's going to be. Maybe in a few years' time, that meterage could double. Would the applicant, I presume, would want to update their solar panels? Also, solar panels have an only particular lifespan when they drop off a cliff of generation. So I can't see from the condition there anything to do with replacement of all the solar panels. It's got to be done within 40 years. They're not going to last that length of time. It mentions maintenance will be just a couple of bands. But surely, within the lifetime of this project, there will be time for the whole system will need to be renewed. So it'll be vehicle movements again at that time. Is that the case? And surely that is not. Is that included in the cumulative impact assessment of this development?
So there's no requirement. I'm not aware of any need to phase up to change the vehicle. So however,
I suppose we're in the early days of solar farms at the moment, but would it be true to say then that at some point within the 40 years there will be upgrades, replacements?
The upgrades and the replacements would be if something was defective, if it broke and needed to be replaced.
That would require planning permission.
No.
So in terms of looking forward into the future, that's almost crystal ball gazing. So we're here today to be to what's on the table.
Yeah.
Mr. Tiger, I noticed there's two parcels of land. I mentioned this to Ed earlier. There's a tiny little strip of land in between. Who owns the tiny little strip? Is that owned by the same people?
In terms of the information provided to us, that is owned by the same. The same party. So the applicant has submitted on the application form, there is an ownership certificate that states as one landowner.
Because I understand, like I said, it was originally, but it isn't now. So if that's left for access, it's not going to have a problem at all.
We've not got any additional information. The onus is on the applicant to demonstrate that the ownership certificate is correct.
So, when the application was submitted, it was all in this one ownership, the whole site?
Yes.
And that was put on the certificate?
Yes.
Okay. Since then, since then, there's been a change of ownership of part of the land. To ask you then the question, what's your knowledge of the current state of land ownership?
I'm glad to inform that the gentleman that's purchased I'm reliably informed that the gentleman that's purchased all the land, the only land is now owned by Mr. Bailey's two solar fields. As marked, the intervening land is owned by a local contractor who's bought the land off Mr. Bayliss with a freehold and no conditions.
Okay, thank you. Scott?
I potentially like to move to refuse on a number of counts. First being conservation officers' responses, which have not, throughout various back and forth, still have not been mitigated satisfactorily, so that there is he still has an objection on the grade 2 listed assets. On visual amenity on Cash Lane, where it's unavoidable in the field entrances and so forth, that solar farm will not intrude onto the visual amenity of the area. And secondly, on the disturbance of the wind solar farm apologies on the property that directly overlooks Cash Lane, to which the mitigation measures do not address, glinting glare onto the first floor windows.
Could you just run past those again, those three or four items?
The conservation officer has an objection which goes throughout various mitigation sort of abilities to do so have still not been addressed, and the greater listed against the greater listed Johnson Hall. The visual amenity on certain aspects of the site, I think on Wincott Lane as well, where due to entrances, it's unavoidable that you will have full view of the solar farm, especially on Cash Lane, where you will be. You'll be driving alongside it, and the solar panels will be facing you within eye line, pretty much on the right hand side. And the disturbance resulting from the solar farm on the property that directly overlooks it, the first floor windows, which, even though the hedge will be 3 metres, still will not mitigate against that.
Can
I add a reason for refusal in that? Is that it is in contravention of the NPPF, and that the land concerned is grade 2 and 3A and not considered preferable.
Well, can I also add as well, I feel there's been undue weight put on the government legislation for renewables.
Planning balance.
Planning balance, thank you, Councillor Beaton. to offset the conservation officer's concerns, which still do not address it.
Councillor Alex Sandiford?
Yeah, and also to add that clearly road access issues with the new ownership of that pocket of land, which is going to cause problems.
Just to clarify, at the stage of the application, there is a declaration by the applicant saying that they own the land. That is what you are considering. There is no evidence physically on the table in front of you that challenges it. You have to go on what evidence you physically have, I'm afraid. I appreciate what you've heard, and I allowed it for fairness. So, but you need to bear in mind you are here in relation to the application as it stands.
Okay, that's clear, Adam?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
I'm not sure if it's covered, but the again, if using the NPPF's terms, it's landscape character and amenity that's it's a contravention of.
So, landscape and visual impact?
Oh, I second it.
Just before that, we have to clarify what is actually proposed anything can be seconded. Because of the number of additions.
But I propose to refuse, Chair.
But you are going against officer's recommendation.
Yes.
So you have to have valid planning reasons.
Yes.
And there's been... We've gone through six different points. So if anything, everything has to be tabled clearly, because bearing in mind you are going against officer's recommendation and you have to have good, sound decision making.
I think the three I listed initially, together with the fourth by Councillor Beattie, which was the loss of agricultural land.
Best.
What Councillor Beattie said.
Yeah, what I said.
Conservation officer's concerns
against heritage assets, particularly Johnson Hall, and mitigation still not addressed his concerns, and he still has an objection. The visual amenity, which I think ties into the landscape.
Impact on the historic landscape.
Yeah, but I think the visual amenity in areas where there is no ability to screen, particularly on Cash Lane, where you have the wide entrances, and I think similarly on the Uncut Lane. And then the third one was the disturbance to the property. First floor on Cash Lane.
And I need to confirm whether they are acceptable planning reasons.
You did mention undue weight on renewables. That's not a reason to object.
Can I just comment on that, please? So, in terms of the reasons for refusal, which members have come up with, you made your own planning balance in terms of how you judged or weighed up the benefits of this renewable scheme against potential harm. Your planning balance is different to officers, therefore you couldn't have a reason for refusal based on planning balance, because that's a judgment that members have made in arriving at these reasons for refusal.
So we accept them.
So we're not allowed to make a judgment?
No, you've made a judgment.
Yeah.
You've arrived at your own planning balance, which is different to officers.
Well, no, I think certainly the first one, I'm in line with the conservation officers' thoughts.
Yeah, I'm just saying that the reason for refusal placed on a planning balance is not a reason for refusal, because that's a judgment by committee. So the four that you're saying are so the conservation, the visual amenity, the glint and glare, and the BMV are reasons for refusal based upon your planning balance.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in terms of the conservation reason for refusal, that's impact on designated heritage assets as listed by the conservation officer, and that will be on the setting, not actual impact on those buildings themselves. So it would be a setting issue. Okay.
Okay.
Everyone following it so far?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have to be clear in terms of what the reasons for refusal are.
Yeah.
So
terms of visual amenity on Cash Lane, Wincoat Lane, what can you explain what you mean by visual amenity? Do you mean visual impact?
Visual impact is, it mentions on various occasions in the reports are mitigation measures. However, certainly on Cash Lane, where we saw where the percentage is going to be, it cannot be addressed and has not been addressed. So, in that locality.
So, is it visual impact in terms of the form of the development?
Form of the development on, yes, on.
Is that. I'm not trying to.
On the form, on how did you, yeah, on the current form of the development on uses of the lane for community purposes?
Is it the impact on the physical appearance or the effect on users of the highway?
Well, I would say potentially both. Use the highway would be linked to Blair. Although I know I realise it.
So in terms of the visual amenity, that's the second reason. That's the impact in the form of the development within the settings, within the context of the landscape.
Correct.
And therefore its impact on the character appearance of the area.
So particularly on Cash Lane where the ground rises significantly above, it goes above the hedgerows, never mind that.
So, and that, just so members clear, that's completely separate to impact on landscape character, which is a different, they do overlap, but there is a different argument there which members have not really got into. As was referred to before, the structure plan character assessment document goes into those details and you haven't explored those today.
Well, I think landscape character, I think Conservation Officer mentioned they're in agreement with in agreement with what Design Midlands say, the nature of the character, this is page 41, the nature and character adjacent rural lane would be adversely affected by the proximity and height of boundary fencing, so it did be touched on that, but that is one point. And there's lots of issues in Design Midlands mentioned, which the Conservation Officer also highlights that he's in agreement with, so I suppose that come into the landscape character. Again, Design Midlands highlighted an issue which I highlighted earlier, which is mitigation relies primarily on existing hedgerows and trees being likely screened fully.
How does it impact though on landscape character?
Yep.
So you need to tell us what defines a landscape character and how this proposal impacts on landscape character.
Undue industrialisation of the rural landscape.
Drop it. Don't need it.
Don't need it. Okay.
You need to be careful, members, in that you have to be very clear in terms of what reasons you're given, because if this goes to appeal and the appeal is dismissed, the authority could still sustain costs because you haven't come up with a sustainable reason for refusing. So I would suggest that you don't use landscape character because you've not really explained that.
I'm happy for that to be dropped.
But we just go with visual impact on the character appearance of the area.
Yes, and the impact disturbance on the residents of the property that overlooks.
Yeah.
That's for the BG.
Can I just ask a question in terms of the BMB, best our land? Is it possible to add to the point I've made that that classification is relatively, well, it's very unusual in Staffordshire and in Stafford Borough, because most land in the borough is 3B, so it is very precious land in that sense. I don't know how you put it in, but that's, I'd leave Richard to put it. So it's against the NPPF anyway, but it's also it's also damaging to the agricultural land quality of the borough.
Chair,
yes.
Regards to Councillor Beattie's comments there, on page 63, paragraph 3, I think it's on paragraph 3, towards the bottom, it mentions, paragraph 3, page 63, the loss of land that Councillor Beattie's indicated. I wonder if that helps the situation.
That's not quite right what's been put down there. It says the proposal would involve the loss of a substantial amount of high-quality productive arable farmland. That's right. Grades 1, 2 and 3 should not be used for solar farms. The NPPF says that you should concentrate on... Well, yes, I think it's right. No, it is right. I'm talking against myself. Yeah, so 1, 2 and 3A.
So I suppose that would come into on reasonable geo planning conditions, incompatible or unacceptable uses potentially.
It's under its own classification under the NPPF, that it's unacceptable use for agricultural land.
We're just trawling through the MPPF.
Oh, right, okay.
To look at BMD.
You do have copies of the MPPF on the table in front of you as well.
So we could have a look as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's
a
good. You missed that on the tour, I think.
Paragraph 187, please.
Paragraph
187, provision B.
Which page is it, sir?
187.
This one doesn't go to 187.
Page 54, sorry, 54, paragraph 187. Paragraph 187b, planning policies and decisions should contribute to and enhance the natural and local environment by recognising the intrinsic character and beauty of the countryside and the wider benefits from natural capital and ecosystem services, including the economic and other benefits of the best and most versatile agricultural lands and of trees and woodland.
Chair, I'd like to include that.
And then somewhere there's a definition by the government on what BMD is.
In the glossary there's a definition of the best and most versatile land. We don't have a local policy in terms of lots of the BMD.
They used to be under the DEFRA policy anyway.
And this paragraph 187, again, doesn't. It's not a policy about the loss of BMD. It's basically saying the policy decision should contribute and enhance the natural and local environment.
Right. Okay. Okay, I think we're on a sticky wicket there. You can have an answer to BMD. I think we should drop that.
Doesn't categorically say that loss of BMD is unacceptable?
Yeah. I think we should drop that because I think it's up for dispute.
What
are
you dropping?
Richard?
The BMB.
It's not.
We don't have a local plan policy which covers the loss of BMB, and the paragraph that we just read out in the MPPF does not categorically say that loss of BMB is unacceptable, only that it should contribute towards and enhance. So there's nothing definitive to say that loss of BMB is from a positive point of view, unacceptable.
So, I'll go with the recommendation.
I think we need to emphasise this. In terms of the Clinton Blair reason for refusal, you are going against environmental health officers. just to emphasise that council's environmental health officers have assessed the difference of glare assessment and found it to be acceptable.
Is assessment and glare assessment that's conducted at 1.8 metres?
Okay.
Okay. And it's a computer model. It's a push motion model as well.
Cashline wouldn't count line for the visual amenity.
Cashline. Oh, visual amenity. Well, certainly Cashline, where it would be the main entrance, and I think there's also a main an entrance on.
So both of those on. So in terms of the visual impact,
yeah.
It's only in relation to those two areas of the application site.
I think you could argue that there's the visual impact, which certainly in winter, which cannot be offset by the mitigation, because the mitigation measures are mostly deciduous planting. I think there's only, when I've read the mitigation on Cash Lane, 5 hollies, which of course are evergreen, mentioned, the rest are deciduous. So I'm not entirely sure how you can mitigate a flinting glare through a hedge with no leaves.
Yeah. So in terms of glinting glare, it's on that specific dwelling.
I think it's because there's a definitive impact against the residents there, yeah.
Yeah, we need to be quite explicit in terms of what impact we're looking at, so it's on that one dwelling.
I think certainly on that dwelling, and I think also on, well, I think additionally, if it's a category B, on users of both of those lanes during periods where the hedgerows are not in leaf.
Because so it's on the occupiers of that particular
dwelling
and the users of local highway network.
Yeah.
Councillor Beattie.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm looking at the advice on best and most versatile land. And it says it's absolutely a material consideration in the UK planning system under agricultural land classification. And in the NPPF, when significant development of agricultural land is demonstrated to be necessary, areas of poorer quality land, grade 3B, 4 and 5 should be preferred. And this county, we've got plenty of grade 3B land which can be preferred.
So it's saying it should be preferred, but it doesn't say that it's unacceptable.
But it does say it's definitely a material consideration.
It is. Because of material consideration,
so
it's in the report, Council.
Sorry?
It's a material consideration because it's in the report, but you have to.
So we're weighing
it in
planning balance, and we're saying it's a valid material consideration.
It's a consideration, but the degree of harm in officers' view.
Well, the officers aren't farmers.
Okay, right. So we've got 3 points that may be valid for recommending refusal. Would you like to summarise them?
So, first one would like the harm to the setting of designated heritage assets, in particular Johnson Hall. Second, harm to the character and appearance of the area, in particular Cash Lane, Wingate Lane, in particular in winter due to inappropriate mitigation. And third one, the impact on amenity of the occupiers of the dwelling to be named on Cash Lane due to glint and glare effects, and also onto users of the local highway network.
Everyone got that? Are you happy with those points? So, go on.
So, are you satisfied that summarises your proposal?
I did have a concern about the generation of soil and how that could impact, and that's been assessed, but I don't think we can, at this current time, put that as a reason. So, yes, I'm happy with those.
So, that is the proposal that is on the table.
Proposed by Councillor Scott Spencer. Seconded by.
I'm not going to second it because I think the BMV should be a material consideration that we add as a reason for refusal.
Officers are only giving advice to members here. If members of the committee are adamant that they want to include that reason, that's for members to decide, not for officers. We're only providing advice.
Can I have a point of clarification on that, please? If it was to go to, which I'm sure this will, to appeal, is it assessed on cumulatively 3 points, or would you include that all four points, each point has to be valid, or if one point seems to be valid and the other ones are not valid, it would still, you know, be dismissed or be agreed with?
We have three reasons for refusal, which would be at the moment. So if this were to be appealed, those reasons for refusal would be appealed.
Mm-hmm.
If the appellant, for some reason, thought that those reasons couldn't be substantiated,
mm-hmm.
then there would be a ground for costs.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have three strong reasons,
mm-hmm.
a fourth weak reason,
mm-hmm.
and we could still, if the appeal could still be dismissed, but the council could be awarded costs against them because the fourth reason
is weak. That's what I was trying to understand here.
Are you happy then, Councillor Beattie, to just have those three reasons rather than having the fourth one in the bill?
No, I think it's important because we've got so many of these applications coming through, and it is important that we protect our agricultural land.
But you're only here for this application. It doesn't matter what's come before, what may or may not be in the pipeline, what's happening in the next borough. It has to be on this application as it stands today.
Councillor Alex Dandyford.
Yeah, I'm going to second the.
Going to second. So it has been proposed, and Alec has jumped in and seconded it, just ahead of Councillor Hood.
That's okay.
Okay. So to refuse, are we happy everyone knows what they're talking about? Yeah.
What's the motion?
Sorry?
So it's the motion. So it's the motion to refuse for the reasons. The 3 points, and it's been seconded by Councillor Sandiford.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Obviously, just to point out, you have, although you laid the initial motion, other people did add to it, and whatever you, and there is a slight conflict in the fact that Councillor Beattie had put forward a reason, and she doesn't want it withdrawn, which potentially can. Means that we can't have a vote.
Oh.
Well, I will withdraw. I would certainly vote in favour for those three reasons. I just would have liked the fourth reason to be.
You're going to withdraw that.
I'll certainly vote in favour of it because agree with the motion.
I have to clarify because you said that you were not happy that it was going to be was going to be withdrawn.
Well, I'll say I'm happy now.
You just have to withdraw the proposal.
Withdraw your reasons.
Well, it wasn't a proposal, and then I'll withdraw my proposal.
So, on those three grounds, then?
Very
unconvinced. All those who support the proposal to refuse, please share.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, thank you. So, that application is refused. Thank you for all your patience.
Happened something
here, I'll tell you the
reason.
Chairman, can you sign the name for the